Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. At Cordell & Cordell, we encourage our clients to participate, to recognize how essential their role in this process is. They've got to be willing to help us help them. And by working jointly in a sort of partnership, we're more likely to get the best possible outcome for our clients. And that's really the standard that our clients can fairly hold us to, is what is the best possible outcome for them. So clients who are facing divorce need to recognize that for them to succeed, they need a partnership between them and their attorney.
The attorneys at Cordell & Cordell work to help men maximize their role in their children's lives. Contact the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys, a partner men can count on. 650-389-1111. Online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Morning, Joe. The IMF has cut its forecast for the UK by 0.3% to 1.7%. Is it your view that the political uncertainty in the UK with regards to Brexit will potentially lead to lower downward revisions in growth numbers for the UK?
I do think so. I think what the IMF is suggesting is that you're going to see a lot of companies, banks, logistics firms, insurance companies invest less capital in the UK over the next 2 or 3 years. And UK is an open economy, open to trade and investment, but Brexit is reducing those flows, inflows that help promote growth. So I think it's a reflection that there's less money heading to the UK over the next couple of years, and that will impinge on growth.
Do you have any idea in terms of what sort of industries perhaps would be affected by Brexit?
I mean, in particular, it's going to be the financial services, logistics, insurance companies, back office operations, perhaps real estate. Kind of on the upside, maybe you pick up in tourism because you're seeing a weaker pound attract more visitors. So, but I really think it's going to be more in the services. And also manufacturing, whether it's automobiles or capital machinery, that could be affected as well. But I think the primary impact on services in particular.
Have there been any numbers that you've done potentially in terms of what will be the impact on unemployment for the UK in terms of a hard Brexit, for example?
Well, it's hard to say, actual numbers. But remember, a hard Brexit or even, kind of a middle-of-the-ground Brexit, a lot of these jobs leaving the UK or the future job growth that's not coming, these are pretty good salaries, whether it's financial services, logistics, insurance, and so forth. These are good white-collar jobs for the most part, and they're going to be missing. So it's hard. I do think, that there is going to be a rise in unemployment, but the bigger issue is just the loss of good-paying white-collar jobs in the future.
Now, the IMF has also cut U.S. growth numbers while raising forecasts for the Eurozone, Japan, China, and emerging markets. What has been the catalyst, really, for what seems to be a very broad-based recovery in global markets?
Well, I mean, I think the markets are reflecting that, the Dow Jones or the S&P, we have had a good year, but overseas from the United States, non-U.S. markets have done even better. And I think the key with the IMF, I think the U.S. economy slowing down or heading into that, say, 2.5% growth, and I think the IMF is ratcheting down its forecast for the U.S. because we haven't seen the fiscal stimulus, be put in place yet, whether it's tax reform, infrastructure spending. So overseas, whether it's India, say ASEAN, like Malaysia, growth is being driven by consumption. Pickup in trade is helping as well. So, we're still in the midst of a synchronized global expansion. But when you get into regions and countries, some countries are further ahead in the cycle, some are further behind.
Now, if you talk about Malaysia itself, zooming in on one specific emerging markets, we have a broader base, what seems to be a much broader based recovery from our export numbers, from our tourism numbers, our overall trade numbers. I think IMF have also revised us upwards from 4.5 to 4.8%. What is your view in terms of the Malaysian market?
Well, the Malaysian market, very important in terms of semiconductors. It's a good, obviously it's tied into the tech sector globally. You mentioned the pickup in tourism and travel. You know, that's emblematic of a region, ASEAN, whether it's Singapore, Indonesia, Thailand, Myanmar, Vietnam. I mean, there's a lot of people there of emerging middle class, more spending, higher per capita incomes, a more educated labor force. So I think Malaysia is well positioned within this big ASEAN market to grow and prosper. You know, when you throw in the trading ties with China and India and Indonesia, those big three giant economies, you know, there's pretty plenty of upside. But, you know, really, Wall Street's too focused on India and China. They don't pay much attention to what's in between. Like countries like Malaysia that offer very good opportunities and value for investors.
Yeah, I think that's quite clear, especially when you talk about Malaysia and oil. Oil is a big part of our revenues. And while we're not a member, OPEC production cuts have been far slower than previously agreed upon in the last OPEC meeting. And Nigeria and Libya are not participating in these cuts. Where does this leave Saudi Arabia's ability to manage OPEC's production effectively?
Well, I think it's much diminished within OPEC and without non-OPEC as well. So, like you said, there's exceptions to every production, but there's always some type of cheating as well. But the big issue for the Saudis in the Middle East is North America, particularly the United States. North America, the United States, they're the swing producers now. We're the big, I think, kind of like, we're like the Saudi Arabia of North America. I'm talking about the United States, and you know, we've seen lower costs in the United States, but higher output. So, I mean, to me, I think Saudi Arabia, OPEC in general, it's a withering cartel because of not only just what's happening within the cartel, but non-OPEC supplies continue to increase.
Now, if you talk about supplies from the U.S., it's essentially lots of increases in production, in shale production, shale-related production. And they've been able to bring their cost of production down to the $50 mark. Do you anticipate that there will be further increases in cost efficiencies moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's already there. I mean, they're saying, you know, the wells are all different, the fields are different. Some producers are like, you know, $40, $35 producing. Yeah, the technology is unrelenting in terms of drilling further, deeper, more efficiently. So, many of these, Texas producers, oil, Oklahoma, I mean, they're producing at say, $30, $35, $40 a barrel. So they're hyper competitive in the technology. This is all about disruptive technology, upending a sector, that, you know, didn't see it coming. So yeah, I see these producers becoming more efficient and profitable, producing more at lower prices.
Now, what about the demand side of the market? How do you see the second half of the year, and do you see that prices will be heading northward?
No, I don't think prices are heading north because I do think you've got, you know, still kind of an excess supply. Demand is okay, probably picking up around, say, 3-4% globally, pick up in China, India, the emerging markets, Japan, Europe. So, I mean, you know, to me, I think kind of the demand side is kind of stable at, let's say, 2-4%. The bigger issue in the United States, even in Europe, is just renewables, alternatives, electric cars, wind, solar. You know, they're slowly, you know, they're a small percentage of the total, but incrementally they continue to jump each year. So, to me, you know, we're not at peak oil, but we are at a different inflection point when it comes to supply and demand and the renewables becoming more greater economies of scale, and which shifts into kind of the petroleum or energy side of the pie.
Now, Joe, the IMF has overall forecast for growth this year globally is 3.5%, and they forecast 3.6% next year. What do you think are the key risks to global economic growth?
I mean, that's a great question, what I think about all the time. To me, it would be, number one, America first, becoming much more protectionist. So if we had, like, U.S.-led trade wars globally, that would slow down trade, revert capital back to each individual home market. So I'm still very cognizant of the threat of trade protectionism. I think the United States could, you know, if we don't get the fiscal package here in the United States, we're looking at that muddling along at 2% growth. I think China's fine. I think the emerging markets are okay. I think the biggest risk is just around policy, you know, at the G20 level, the U.S. level, in that sense. I don't see any bubbles out there that need to be burst. But, you know, remember that the key is if we get weaker than expected growth, then we're still reliant on the central banks for liquidity. And we just push out the day of reckoning when it comes to paying off all this debt.
Hey, Joe, thanks for coming on. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist, U.S. Trust, BOA Private Wealth Management.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Summertime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
If you're topping off your burger with grilled onions and blue cheese, pair your work of art with a spicy Malbec.
Nothing beats a buttery Chardonnay with grilled corn on the cob. I'm ready to find you the perfect bottle of white for your next get-together.
Pack up the cooler for this weekend. We've got canned wine and beer ready to throw on ice.
Now with 9 locations in the Bay Area. Visit our newest store at Stevens Creek Central. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers!